Good evening. My name is John Todd, and I'm an alcoholic. And it's a pleasure to be here tonight, and I certainly would like to thank the committee for asking me to come. I'm not the speaker. In fact, I'm not even the backup speaker. I'm the backup speaker. Before we get started, I want to tell you that I'm old. I didn't plan on living this long. If I would have, I'd have taken a hell of a lot better care of myself. I didn't look like this when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I looked pretty damn good. I was 29 years old. And you people did this to me. There's a couple old guys sitting on a park bench, and one guy's got his head held down like this, and he says, "I'm married to a 25-year-old dancer, the most beautiful girl in the world, and the sex is unbelievable." The other guy says, "What are you laughing at?" He said, "I forgot where I live." I'd sure like to thank the committee for asking me to come up here, and boy, it was great. We had finger sandwiches this afternoon, and there was one left. Of course, I was late. I'm always late. Wherever I go, I'm late. But it's a pleasure to be asked to participate in any meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous anywhere. You'll find out why I'm the backup speaker. I speak everywhere once. Nobody's ever asked me back yet. One of the guys I sponsor says, "Don't lie." I said, "Hell, I couldn't make a lie up as interesting as what the last 37 years have been." And it's true, I couldn't. I'm supposed to tell you in a general way what I used to be like, what happened, what I'm like now. And I really can't tell you what it was like when I got here, because if you'd have seen me, you'd probably had a better opinion than I had. I was young, and I was real scared, and I didn't even know I was scared. I had no idea. I had a bad attitude, but it was the only attitude I had. You know, you get here, they say, change your attitude. How in the hell can you change your attitude? It's all you got. I came to AA when I was 29, and I walked into to a participation meeting, and I sat in the back room, and I was drunk. And if this is your first night and you're drunk, I thoroughly understand it. It made more sense drunk than it did when I came back sober. And these people stood up and, oh God, they said terrible things about themselves. I mean, it was horrible what they talked about. Finally, the woman that was leading the meeting, oh, the meeting was exactly what I thought it was going to be. The average age was about 109, and the woman that led the meeting had a face like a chewed boot, and their mother stabbers and father rapers, and they're all there. And I'm sitting in the back of the room, and I said, "I'm drunk. I got a half a pint, and I take a little drink every once." The room was kind of dark. It was down at 26 and Broadway in Santa Monica. And she says, "A young man in the back of the room, would you like to share?" Well, of course I'd like to share. I'm drunk. Jesus. So I got up behind the podium, and it was, you know, about like this one, and I said, "My name's John, and I don't know whether I'm an alcoholic or not." And they all laughed. And I said, "But you know, it's a funny thing." I said, "I fall asleep, and when I fall asleep, I wake up, and I don't know I'm awake. And I go out in front and pee all over the geraniums." Well, we got some geranium peers out there. Same thing happened, and I tell you, when I was doing that, my wife was not laughing at me. And when they started laughing for some, I forgot to tell you, I was very sensitive when I got here, extremely sensitive. And when they started laughing for some reason or another, I knew they weren't making fun of me. And I sat down, and at that meeting, I met a man who was going to change my life. And he was a Baptist, and I'm a Catholic, and that shouldn't work. And he was from the South, and I'm from California. But he got me up against the wall, and he started this stuff, you know, and that just got me. And he started telling me about this disease of alcoholism, and I remember what he said. He said that if you're like I am, and I doubt very much that you are, but if you are like me, you have an allergy to the body that's coupled with an obsession of the mind. And this obsession will drive you to take a drink. And the drink will kill you. And he gave me his phone number. And everybody else gave me their phone number. And I threw them all away but one. I stuck that down in my wallet. And for the next year, on and off, I went to AA meetings. I read the book, didn't make any sense. So if you're new, and you don't get, you know, it just didn't make any sense. I couldn't understand any of it, but there was a couple passages in there that made sense. One of them was pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. I knew what that was. And the other one was, they talked about trying a little controlled drinking. They talk about going down to a bar and getting yourself a drink and to try to drink a little of it and walk out and see how you do. Well, now, when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was addicted to everything I could put my hands on. When I first came to AA, if you ever said anything other than Alcoholics Anonymous, they'd run you out of the door. But I took everything. I had better living through chemistry. My drug of choice was alcohol because that's what I could put my hands on. But I took chemistry, you know, put you to sleep, wake you up, make you feel good, make you feel bad, make you feel everything. They got a pill for everything. There's only one thing they haven't got a pill for, conscious contact with a God greater than yourself. That's it, a pill for everything else. But I got sobered up again. I was living at home with Mama, where any good alcoholic man lives. And I had a wife and three kids out in West Covina, and I'd like to tell you a little bit about Quasimodo, but she couldn't stand me when I was drunk, and I couldn't stand her when I was sober. And so we had a 13-year-old war that went on, and there was three little babies that came out of that war, and God, I felt sorry for them. I wanted to be a father, but I just couldn't do it. I wanted to be a lot of things. When I drink, there's a certain point that I get to where I can do anything. You know, the job's not that bad, and the wife's not that bad, and the kids are all right, and I'm going to join the PTA and do a little league, and I'm going to do it tomorrow. But right now, I'm going to have another drink. And I came to AA, and I was beat, and I didn't know it, and I had this disease, and I didn't know it, and I was dying from denial. But nevertheless, I kept hanging around. I kept coming in drunk. I kept sitting in the back of the room, and I kept listening. One time, my mother asked me, she said, "Are you still going to those AA meetings?" And I said, "Yeah, I'm still living at home, so I must be going something." And she said, "Well, what do you think?" I said, "Well, I may be a drunk, but I'm not nuts. Those people are crazy. They stand up and say they're crazy." And I thought somebody was crazy, thought they were Jesus Christ or Columbus or somebody. And I thought I could drink. Boy, that was crazy. Well, I went out and I did some controlled drinking. I got sobered up again. And God, it hurts. I was a blackout drinker from the very beginning, so sobering up was tough. And I went out and I got another job, and I hope that nobody in the room ever has to drink and ever has to go out and get another job again when you've got a work history like mine. But if you do, I'll tell you what worked for me. I just one fire after another. So I went down to get this job, and I filled out the application. I told them the truth. And they said, "Well, I noticed that you haven't worked very long in so many places. Why is that?" And I said, "Well, I said, you know, my wife's an alcoholic." And the kids and I just get her straightened out. And I get another job. And then she goes out and does it again. But this time, we're going to do it. So they gave me the job. Now, to be honest with you, the only thing I did was quit drinking. I'm doing everything else. Better living through chemistry. But I didn't drink. And 2 weeks went by. And every night I got off of work and I went down to the bar and I had one short beer and I drank half of it and I walked out. Worked 5 days, 2 days off, worked 5 days. I'm not an alcoholic. I say when I want to drink. Phenomenon of craving does not work for me. Well, I got my paycheck, and I went down to the bar, and I said, "You know, cash in?" They said, "Yes." And they handed me a pitcher of beer, and just like that, I drank it. I never even thought. And that started me off on what was going to become my last drink. It's funny, every night for 2 weeks, I had the ability to say no. But for some reason or another, when that pitcher of beer was set down in front of me, I couldn't stop. And my drunks had run me about 2 weeks, and I'd either be in jail or I'd be in a hospital. And then it'd be about 2 or 3 weeks getting back where I could eat solid food again. So this time, all my life I'd had two secrets. The first one was I knew I'd never live to be very old. And the second one was I knew one day I'd have to kill myself. And I got drunk enough this time, and I came to Las Vegas. I lived in Santa Monica, and I was going to get drunk enough to kill myself. And I got drunk enough to get thrown out of Stardust, but that was about it. So I ended up in room 1014 of the Fremont Hotel. And they didn't have any screens on the windows. You could open it up, and I looked down there in the street, and I saw all those people running around like a bunch of little ants. And I knew those people down there had something going for them, and I didn't have anything, nothing. I lived in a total world of make-believe. Nothing was real. I didn't have to do anything. I didn't have to be a doctor, lawyer, or an Indian chief. All I had to do was get a half a pint of vodka and put it in me, and I could become anything I wanted to become. And I'm 30 years old, and I've been to AA, and AA won't work, and I want to die because now it's time. And if there wouldn't have been a God in heaven that would have listened to a drunk that night, I'd have died. I tried to get drunk enough to jump out the window, and I couldn't. And I tried to get drunk enough to fall out the window, and I couldn't. And nothing was working. And I did something that was as alien to my behavior as if I were to float out in the audience right now. I did something that I didn't believe in, but I got down on my knees and I asked the God that I did not understand and I did not know and I did not believe in if he'd help me. And from that day to this, I haven't had to take a drink. Now, I'm a brain surgeon, kind of an alcoholic. I'm the kind of a guy that sits in a bar and when she comes in and sits down, whatever she wants, I'll do. I mean, it's an example of, hi, my name's John. What's your name? Well, I'm Ruth. Ruth, you're from Reno? No, I just flew in. Oh, really? What flight did you fly on? Oh, 740. Is that right? Well, did you know I was a co-pilot on flight 747? And that's the way I live my life. I just did whatever people wanted me to do. A couple of those out there, too. There's an alcoholic that wanders into a sex and love addicts convention by mistake. And he sits down over in the back, and a girl comes over and sits down and says, are you a Native American? She says, oh, I love the Native Americans. She says, I see a Native American. I just want to jump his bones. She says, are you Jewish by chance? She says, oh, I love Jewish men. That dark hair and that thick beard. Ooh. She says, I'll tell you what I really like, though. She says, you know those pickups with those great, big, huge tires? Oh, she says, I get so excited there, I can't stand it. She says, what's your name? He says, Tano Goldstein, but all my friends call me Buck. And that's kind of the way I was. You know, I was Tano Goldstein, you'd call me Buck. So I didn't have a real world that I lived in. I had a manufactured world that I lived in. They talked about a change of personality. Man, I could feel it. That cold half a pint had rolled down me, and man, it was just, I could explode. And I stood straighter, and I looked better. Life was wonderful. So I went on this drunk, and I couldn't go out the window. And I got down on my knees, and I asked this God that I didn't believe in. And I had good reason for not believing in him. See, I believe that the people in Alcoholics Anonymous, if they ever got to know me, wouldn't allow me to be here. Because I read the book, and there was nobody in that book like me. You were all good-fearing, God-fearing people. I mean, Bill Wilson's got a wife. What the hell are you doing coming to AA with a wife, for God's sake? You know, I couldn't understand it. So I was convinced of the fact that all the stories in the big book were your stories. And I didn't have a story like that. I always wanted to be a John Wayne, but I was a Pee Wee Herman. And I knew it, and I didn't want you to know it. And I'd do anything to prove to you that I was a John Wayne. Every once in a while, I have a senior moment, and when I do, I just stop, and I gotta remember where I'm at, and if I get lost, somebody just scream, and I'll get back to wherever it's at. I'd come off this drunk, and I'd ask God to help me, and my dad came up from Los Angeles, my stepfather, the man I hated all my life. And my mother had told me a week or two before, I don't have a son anymore, drunk or sober, and don't you ever come around this house again. And I beat that man up all my life, telling everybody what a jerk he was, and he was the only one that was left. And he was a carpenter, and he got up out of his bed, and he flew to Vegas, and he drove me back home in a stolen car, and I was in a lot of trouble. They put me in a halfway house. I called this guy that was going to help me, the one number that I saved, and he walked into the front room, and God, he was strong. I'll never forget that as long as I live. And he walked over, and he put his arms around me, and he told me that he loved me. And I believed him. And I didn't even know what love was. And I'm sicker than a dog eating peach seeds. And he sat down and he talked to me and he said, well, we're going to have to get you in a halfway house. So they took me out and they put me in a halfway house out in the valley. And that's what I used to be like and that's what happened. And I got about 35 minutes left and I get to tell you the best part. because I got to tell you what's happened since I've been here. I've been sober for four decades, my 30s, my 40s, my 50s, and my 60s. And guys like me don't stay sober. When I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, my sponsor asked me to figure out how much time I'd do if I did minimum sentence for every crime I'd ever committed. And it came up to 189 years and three life sentences. Guys like me don't stay sober. I never remember a day in my life that I didn't go without using some kind of a chemical, something. I don't know when I took my first drink, but I remember as a small child laying on the fender of my mother's Ford inhaling gasoline fumes. And I remember how it smelled today. And Mom asked me why I did it, and I said, I don't know, it makes me feel good. So I wandered in here and I surrendered to this disease, and you people did something for me that it took me 10 years to figure out what you'd done. I said for a long time that I owed my life to the steps in this book, and that's partially true. But I owe my life to you people, because I couldn't figure out what it was all about. And you babysat me, and you loved me, and you allowed me to make a fool out of myself, and you allowed me to make every mistake I'd ever made drunk, and then I made up some new ones. Now, in the 36 years I've been in Alcoholics Anonymous, I've been married, I've been divorced, I've been in jail, I've been bankrupt, I've had cancer, I've had money, I've been broke, I've had new cars, I've driven old cars. And so since I've been here, I've experienced something called life. And I had no idea what it was till I got here. I should have said to begin with, but this is just my opinion. It's just my opinion, and God knows I've got one. But the neat thing about Alcoholics Anonymous is we in Alcoholics Anonymous can have an opinion for 10 years and get right in the middle of a sentence explaining it to somebody and say, you know, I'm wrong. One of the things you folks gave me was a gift to be wrong. Out there, they can't be wrong. I'm wrong out there. After they once commit themselves, they got to die by it. That's where I was when I got here. Well, my sponsor was one of these guys that you had to write an inventory. So I started right out writing an inventory. In fact, I'm still drunk. And my grand sponsor, he was a sneaky guy. He got me a piece of paper and he said, you know, in AA, he says, we write down all the people we owe money to and the people we've harmed. And we just do that. So he says, make a list. And I made a list and it was three pages. I'm still shaking. And he said, well, we'll go to lunch. And I thought he was going to throw the list away. Well, he took the yellow pad of paper and put it in his desk drawer. And for the next 15 years, every time I come up there whining, he'd take the list out. Well, let's see, John, what about... And it took 16 years to erase all those things, but saved my life once again. I take an inventory. And I took an inventory, and... you know how, when you take your third step, they say that, you know how relief comes? Well, it came from a sponsor. I didn't get anything. You people in AA tricked me, and I'll tell you right now, you tricked me into it. I had no idea of doing it. Because you got me to turn my world and my life over to the care of God. If this big book is radioactive, and you don't know it, and you take this big book and hold it in your hand, whether you like it or not, you're going to change. Willpower has nothing to do with it. And you tricked me into taking it. I was getting ready to go to court the next morning, and they were going to give me a lot of time. And that's a real good time to turn your will over to God. Now, if you're new in AA, you're going to get a sponsor, and you're going to think he's the smartest guy in the world, and he's not. He's just a parrot. He's repeating what everybody told him. But I thought my sponsor was great. And I'm getting ready to do some serious time, and he told me that... now that I turned the world of my life over to care of God, if God wanted me to do it, I had a reason inside that penitentiary, and I was going to walk in there with my head held high. He also told me that I may be the only example of Alcoholics Anonymous they ever see, and to walk in there with my head held high. And the first thing I ever did in my life that I didn't run from was show up in that courtroom. I could have run, and I didn't. They held me out till the day I was going to trial, and I went in there. So I'm going to change when I accept this thing, whether I like it or not. You don't have to participate in this, but if you're new, just kind of look around the room, because this is something I've only heard once in an AA meeting. Now, you girls are all lily white when you get here, but there's a couple of guys in here that are kind of kinky like I am. How many people, when they came to Alcoholics Anonymous in this room, had some secret character defect that they really liked and they swore they'd never get rid of? Can you raise your hands up? Look around, new people. How many people got rid of those character defects? Damn radioactivity. Over the period of years, I started to change. I didn't want to change. I didn't want to change. I liked it the way it was. I'm a pathological liar. I'd rather lie to you than tell you the truth. My wife, Quasimodo, told me one time that I ought to be a lawyer, and I wasn't smart enough to be a lawyer, so when I got sobered up, I had a magic show for 30 years. I lied to children. But I loved to lie. I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. I found out that lying was a character defect, and I asked God to remove it, and nothing happened. And I'm working at this program. I'm working there. I'm doing as hard as I know how to do it. And I'm sober 7.5 years. And I'm sponsoring people, and I'm going to meetings, and I'm doing everything that I know how to do to the best of my ability. And if you ask me what day it is, you better get somebody to check it out, because I probably lie to you. And I'm back in the... I'm back in Philadelphia, and I'm a salesman, and a snowstorm comes in, and they came over the PA system, and they said, we're being grounded, and if there's anybody that has to get back to LAX, come up and tell us why, and we'll let you back. Well, I'm the kind, I don't think about lying. It just happens. And so I get up, and I put my London fog on, and I walked up to the counter, and I said, pardon me, ma'am. I said, my name's Dr. Todman. And I said, I'm going back to Santa Monica Hospital to do a procedure on a little child. And if you can't get me on this plane, if you call the hospital, I'm sure they'll get a jet to fly me back. And I went over and I sit down, and I still hadn't realized I'd lie, tell you the truth. And, you know, the PA system comes on, and they said, we'll be boarding now, Dr. Todman. So I stand up. They take me in the plane, they sit me down, and I had a coach ticket, but they put me where I really belong, first class. And they sit me down, and this little girl said, oh, Dr. Todman, here's one of your colleagues. This is Dr. Goldstein. Only he's a real doctor. Now, I don't know if you know how long it takes to fly from Philadelphia to LAX. Takes about 37 and a half years. And this jerk wants to talk about medicine. You know, when you're wrong, promptly admit it. I don't do that. I'm sorry. If I'd have been a member of AA, I'd have said, you know, I'm sorry, I'm a liar, and da-da-da-da-da, and I told him my poor story about my alcoholism. You'd probably like to hear that one. But I couldn't do it. And so I sit there, and I had a migraine headache, and I went to the bathroom, and I mean, God, it was horrible. And I made a, somewhere over Texas, me and God made a deal. And I make a deal with God. I tell you, they work too, by God. I said, God, if you get me out of this, I'll swear I'll never do it again. And from that day to this, I have never been a doctor. God can and will if sought. Now, when I go fishing, don't ask me how many fish I caught. But if I tell you whatever it is, you can take it to the bank. As my character defects started to be removed from me, I realized that I don't lie because of you. I don't lie because of me. I got tired of the damage it was doing to myself, and I didn't know what the damage was. You sit down and you write an inventory, and you write down your fears, and you write down your resentments, and you write down your sex. Oh, that's interesting. I like that one. That's a good one. I'm 30 years old. I've fathered 3 children. What are you going to tell me about sex? What are you going to tell me? And so my sponsor sat down, and he said, John, he says, we're not going to worry about the damage you've done to them. What kind of damage have you done to yourself? Now, I don't know about you, but my secrets aren't resentment secrets. And my secrets aren't fear secrets. My secrets are sex secrets. I'm not going to let you know. And I sit down, and I took that first 5th step, and there was stuff in my life I was never going to tell you. But I got rid of a little of it. And then I went back and I got a little bit more of it, and I got a little bit more of it, and I had one I was never going to let go of, ever, ever. And I'm sitting down at 26 in Broadway, and I'm sober a little while, probably 9 years, maybe 10 years. And the guy that 12-stepped me a year before I got sobered up came in and sat down next to me. He's dead now. And he starts telling me about this behavior, and it was my secret. I never heard it in AA. It's my secret. I looked over at him and I said, you know, that's the kind of stuff we do when we're drunk. He said, I did it last night. I was free. So whatever you've got, there's nothing in this world you haven't done. I haven't done or thought of doing. It's just that simple. You know, I was kind of like a house and I had all these rooms. And some of these rooms, the doors were nailed shut. There was boards over them. Now, if he even stood in front of that door, I had to go out and get drunk just thinking about what was in that room. And what you've done for me in Alcoholics Anonymous is you've freed me. You've taken all the doors off the house, and I go into all the rooms. Now, I may not stand up here and tell you about it, but there's nothing that I've done I won't share with anybody. And I found out something. There's no such thing as an inhuman act. A human being cannot commit an inhuman act. And I found out that these deep, dark secrets that I've got, that if I can find out somebody else, it's the same thing. That I have the ability to do something that no other human being can do, really. Only we in Alcoholics Anonymous. Doctors can't do it. Priests can't do it. I can reach down into the abyss, and I can pull out another John Tucker. I did a lot of rotten things in my lifetime. I destroyed the life of those three children. I turned that woman that was married into just unbelievable. But you know, a little payback is when I can hand a guy a birthday and he's got a year, and I remember where he came from. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm one of these guys, it's not my message. I'm like the guy from Pizza Hut. I just deliver it. I don't make it. But I'm a guy that says, if I don't deliver it, it don't get delivered. A lot of people in AA say, well, you know, if I don't do it, somebody else will. I don't believe that's true. I don't believe it's true. When I was sober 4.5 years, I came home from work one day. I was married to a little girl in AA, and she was a sweet little thing. God, she was from Texas. She weighed about 80 pounds. Well, I got to tell you about the meeting. I was asked to go up to an AA meeting up in San Francisco and speak, and I got up there to that meeting, and it was a podium, and it had two lights on it. It had a red light and a yellow light. She was a 10-minute speaker, and then you have a yellow light going at 5, red, you're through, and then I was a main speaker. I spoke for 45 minutes. I was carrying a big message up there. And at that time, you know, I loved Chuck Chamberlain. I'd follow him around, and I'd walk home from the meetings at night, and I'd practice what I'd learned in the meeting, and I'd put this pitch together, and it was a little bit of everybody's talk, but I thought it was great. You know. And they asked me to talk at this banquet meeting, and so we go up there, and Judy gets up at the podium, and I look at her, and boy, I'm telling you, her legs are shaking so bad it's unbelievable. She's just rattling. And she looks at the audience, and she gets real, real small, and she says, my name's Judy, and I'm an alcoholic. Then she takes a great big deep breath. And 45 minutes later, she's still rattling. I knew my sponsor was right. I had no business marrying this crazy AA woman. And she's rattling about all this stuff, and this 45-minute talk that had been practicing is getting shorter and shorter and shorter. If there's any way that I could have struck her dead from that podium, she'd have died that night. And all of a sudden, she becomes aware of what she's doing, and she's shocked back into reality, and she gets real small again. And she says, I'm so sorry, but she says, I'm just so glad to be alive, and she sits down. And I had an intermission, and I knew what the lady was going to say that ran the place. I mean, I'd driven all the way up from California, and I'd brought a couple of carloads of the guys that I sponsored up there. And, you know, I was responsible for several of these seats being sold. I knew what she was going to say. I'll give you 30 minutes. Well, he had the intermission. She walked up, and she said, John, you've got 5 minutes. Well, I'm a brain surgeon. I'm a professional liar. And sometimes when guys like me are put under stress, some great stuff comes out because God talks. So John Todman, I stood up and I said, my name is John Todman, I'm an alcoholic, I used to drink, I came to Alcoholics Anonymous and I don't drink anymore, and I sat down. And 750 people stood up, yay! The guys I sponsored walked up to me and said, John, that's the best talk you've ever given. But that's the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's it, you know. I tell you that, then the rest of the time I'm going to tell you war stories. I wanted to put this magic show out, and I didn't know how to do it. So I took the 12 steps and the 12 traditions, and I put them into my life. 20 years later, I'm standing on a stage, and they're giving me the high, they're giving you the highest award that a man in my business can get. The best I ever did was wet pants in the penitentiary. You gave me that. Here's a guy that can't come within 5 miles of his own family because his family isn't safe when he's there. And I'm going around schools giving school assemblies. God, I loved it. Best 29 years of my life. Loved it. I stood on that stage, and we knew who was going to win the competition. And they stopped when I got ready on the night, and they said, we're not going to give it to who we said we were going to give it to. We're going to give it to John Todd. And I walked out there, and hell, I didn't want to say I made my living with my mouth. And the only thing I could say is there's people that never did it. And they're both sober today. Now, I'm not recommending you do it. I'm just saying I was willing to go to any length. I will say as a public service, I keep my clothes on now, though. I will say that. Okay, so I'm sober a long time, and I'm in the AA community in Las Vegas, and I own the local taping company, and I'm in another jackpot. I'm married to this woman that beats the crap out of me. And how does a guy stand up and say there's a 130-pound woman beats me up? So I told her, I said, the next time you do that, you're going to meet somebody you don't want to meet. And she did it again. And I stood up and I said, the next time you do that, I said, I'm going to knock your intercoursing head off. Is that clean enough? And I took a telephone away from her, and 5 minutes later, the Henderson police were there. And 30 minutes later, I'm sitting in a cell down in the Henderson Police Department and arrested for domestic violence. And I was sober 34 years, and I didn't belong to be there. And I got down on my knees in that cell that night, and I said, God help me, I can't help myself. And I gave up. Once again, if I could have died, I'd have died that night in that cell because my life was of no value. And when they arrested me in my pajamas, I made one call to a man I sponsored. And when I walked out of that jail cell the next morning in my pajamas, you guys were there. And you had a car for me, and you had money for me, and you had a place for me to live, and you had money for a dinner for me, and you had a cell phone for me. And the interesting part about it is all these guys were the guys that I sponsored. They were the selfish, self-centered little twerps that were just like me. And I realized that my life was of value because once again, they learned the lesson that Jack McNellis taught me. And I went through some pretty shaky times there. I had a member of AA who's a downer in Las Vegas came up to me and said, if I was sober as long as you are and I was arrested, I'd never tell a soul. And I said, well, I'll tell you something, buddy. I said, somebody in this audience tonight's going to get arrested. And you got to learn how to get arrested and not drink. And you got to learn how to do all this stuff and not drink. And that's what you taught me. So I came out, and it cost me a lot of money, and it was humiliating. And I ended up with a divorce, and I was sober a long time, and I was an old man, and I was alone, and I didn't want to be there. And my sponsor said, why don't you write a letter to God and tell God what kind of a woman you want and what you'll do for it. And so I sit down and I say, I can't do that. I can pray only for the knowledge of His will for me and the power. He said, that's not true. He says, you can ask God that this is what you want and if it'll make the universe better around you, would it be all right? And I did that. I wrote that letter. And I wrote my secrets down in that letter. See, when I lost that family, it hurt me so bad I was never going to do it again. I'd never do that again. When I lost my children, I almost died. In fact, I had to go out on the beach in Santa Monica and dig four graves, and bury four people that really weren't there. Because if I went on anymore, I would have died. But one of my secrets was, is I wanted to meet a woman who had a child so young that he'd only know me as his father. I wanted to meet a dark-skinned woman I wanted her to be tall. I wanted her to have braids down to her shoulders. And I wrote exactly what I wanted. And I went on about my business. In January, I got a phone call. I get a lot of phone calls at my house. And oh, I want to say before I go any further with the story, I had a good friend in Las Vegas, Nevada, and I gave up his friendship because he was 13 stepping, and I couldn't stomach it. And so I gave up his friendship. And like most of the things I do, I had to tell him why I was doing it. I'm a person that believes that there's nothing in this book that says who's going to help you. We picked a woman off Fremont Street several years ago, and she was down on Fremont Street working as a $10 hooker. And when they put her in a halfway house, and the woman around the halfway house says, I do not believe in men sponsoring women, but in this lady's case, it's an absolute necessity. A week sober, she tore a door off the hinge. 2 weeks sober, she tried to cut somebody's throat with a knife. And she joined you, and you gave her what you give us. And today she has 2 master's degrees, is about that far from a doctorate, and she did the whole thing with Alcoholics Anonymous. So I believe when somebody asks me for help, I give it to them. I know the difference between right and wrong, and I try and do it. So the phone rings, and there's a woman on the phone, and she's down on Fremont Street. She's got a little baby with her. And for an hour, hour and a half apart, I talked to her all night long. And we couldn't find a place to put her there, and she said the magic words. She said, I'm tired. I can't do this anymore. And we finally found a halfway house to take her and this little baby, and I forgot about it. I just, you know, it's what you do. And about a month later, I walked into that halfway house, and the lady in the letter, it was her. And I ran out of the room, and I called my sponsor, and I said, my God, I found her. And he said, what in the hell are you doing talking to me then? There's only one problem. She's got 30 days of sobriety, and I got 36 years. And I found out something I never knew. See, where I came from, there was a word we don't use, and it's courtship. And I courted her. I kept my hands off of her. And I tried to help her. And I fell in love with her. And I fell in love with that little boy. And the people in Alcoholics Anonymous in Las Vegas crucified me. And I learned some in AA a long time ago. I don't defend myself in AA. If you know who I am and you accuse me of something, that's cool. I don't care. I can defend myself. So I never defended myself. I had one woman in Alcoholics Anonymous call me up. And she took her last drink in her husband's house, and he'd been sober 15 years. And she now has about 10 years. And she said, John, she said, no man ever seduced a woman. I figured that out. You know, she told me. She said, I know what you're doing. But anyway, we got together, and she was living in his halfway house. And all of a sudden, they jacked the rent up double. And she's getting up every morning at 4 o'clock and going to work. She can't pay the rent. And I got a great big mobile home where I live. I said, well, if you want to, why don't you come out and live in this mobile home? I said, I got a bedroom. You can live in that bedroom. And she said, why? She knew I loved her. I knew she loved me. So we came out and we started our life. She said, I've got some other children. Oh. All right, who cares? So one day she says, let's go down to Greyhound Bus Depot. And I went down there, and there are 2 little girls with eyes about this big around. Kiana in Kansas. Are you our new daddy? I said, yeah. A little while later, I went down and picked up another boy, eyes about this big around. Then I went down to Greyhound Bus Depot, and I got a teenage girl with a Wonder Bra. Jeez. I told her one time, I said, if you can ever find a boy that likes those things as much as you do, boy, you're going to have a slave. I called my sponsor up. I said, what in the hell am I going to do? He says, don't go down to Greyhound Bus Depot anymore. Anyway. 67 years old, and I got 4 kids. And I never had it so good. I hope I can tell you this, and if there's anybody in this audience that thinks that men don't cry, watch me. Because I'm so grateful what's been given me, I don't know how to thank you. I've done everything. I've done everything I ever wanted to do. And at the end of my life, I found out what I always wanted. I wanted family. Those of you that have that with the children, you know what I'm talking about, and those of you that don't, stick around, you'll learn. He loves me unconditionally. Now, my mother loved me unconditionally, but she's always taking my inventory. And this little guy gets up on my lap and picks his nose, sticks his finger in my ear and farts. He thinks that's cute now. And he tells me that he loves me. And he does. And I get up in the middle of the night, and I walk through my house, and my wife's safe, and the children are safe. And once again, I'm the guy that can't come within three quarters of a mile of his children because I'd hurt him. And it's all because of you people. I could do none of it. I had three kids. All of them are nuts. I had a heroin addict girl since she was 14 years old. And I lived my whole life waiting to get the call that she was dead. And a month ago, I got the call. Only it wasn't him, it was my son. And he was sober 6 years. And he relapsed. And he went to a treatment center, and he came out, and he killed himself. The door does not swing both ways. Now, we all know this is a terminal disease, and there are people sitting in this room now, maybe you, maybe me, and we're going to prove it's terminal, because we're going to die drunk. It's the only way I can prove it. If you're here, and if you're sober, you've got a gift, an unmerited gift. And there's a crack that falls down on the floor, and when it falls down, guys like me fall through the cracks. If I could have written a list of what I needed to make me happy in 2 years, I would have cheated myself. Cheated myself. So if you're new here today, this meeting's for you. There's only two people in the room that are in trouble, the new guy and the speaker, and I think we're both going to make it tonight. We're a society of men and women who have a way of living where we don't have to drink anymore. And I really can't tell you why. I would much rather talk about the steps than talk. I've got a step study I've been doing about 20 years, and I love to talk about this book. This is the most remarkable book I've ever read. There's one line in the book, and I just want to say it because it's true. The people who wrote this book take two-thirds of the book taking it through two steps. And they finally get to page 59 and they say, a description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and a personal adventures before and after make clear three pertinent ideas. In other words, everything that they know about this recovery, everything they know about the disease, leads them to these three places. That we're alcoholic and we cannot manage our own lives, that probably no human power can do it, and that God can and will if sought. It says nothing about finding. To seek is to look for or to hunt. When children go on an Easter egg hunt, they're seeking the eggs. Now, I'm a Catholic where I come from. We got real strict rules. And in Alcoholics Anonymous, all you did was trick me into taking that third step, and God did the rest. My life today is so full that, Jesus, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. My wife's sitting down. She's standing up herself. It's my wife out here. My life's so full today that, God, I don't know. I don't know. I win megabucks every night. Every night I win megabucks. And so if you're new, God, I'm glad you're here. And if you're sitting out there and you got 10 years of sobriety and you're crazy, God, I understand it. I'm fairly sane today, but hell, the night's not over yet. You never know what's going to happen. I'll die out there by myself, but with you people, I won't have to die. I can live. With you people, I can be the husband I wanted to be. I can be the man I want to be. And I can look at myself in the mirror and I can say, you know, you're okay. You're okay. Thank you for sitting here and watching it. I didn't notice too many people fell asleep, and I really appreciate it. Anytime I can spend an hour talking about my favorite subject, me, that's good. Have a great convention. We've got some great speakers. And the only thing that I can tell you is my name's John Todman, and I'm an alcoholic. I used to drink, and I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I don't drink anymore. And for that, I shall be eternally grateful. And God bless you.